Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Na yujyamanaya bhaktiya. Bhagavati akilatmani sadvishosti shivakpanta yoginam brahma siddhaye na yujyamanaya bhaktiya bhagavati akilatmani sadvishosti shivakpanta yoginam brahma siddhaye na not yujyamanaya being performed bhaktiya devotional service Bhagavati, towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akila Atmani, the Super Soul. Sadvishaha, like. Asti, there is. Shivaha, auspicious. Pantaha, path. Yogina, of the yogis. Brahma Siddhaye, for perfection in self-realization. Translation in purport. By His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Perfection in self-realization cannot be attained by any kind of yogi unless he engages in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For that is the only auspicious path. Purport. That knowledge and renunciation are never perfect unless joined by devotional service, is explicitly explained here. Na yujyamanaya means without being dovetailed. When there is devotional service, then the question is where to offer that service. Devotional service is to be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Super Soul of everything, for that is the only reliable path of self-realization or Brahman realization. The word Brahma Siddhaye means to understand oneself to be different from matter, to understand oneself to be Brahman. The Vedic words are Aham Brahmasmi. Brahma Siddhi means that one should know that he is not matter, he is pure soul. There are different kinds of yogis, but every yogi is supposed to engage in self-realization or Brahman realization. It is clearly stated that unless one is fully engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot have easy approach to the path of Brahma Siddhi. In the beginning of the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that when one engages himself in the devotional service of Vasudeva, spiritual knowledge and renunciation of the material world automatically become manifested. The verse is Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yerahoitukam. Devotional practice, the discipline, yoga, of devotional service, offered to Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, easily and quickly brings about knowledge and causeless renunciation. Sorry, I'm interrupting the purport. Knowledge and renunciation is what the practitioners of Jnana Yoga are looking for, are striving for. But the one person who practices devotional service to the Supreme Lord achieves these automatically without any separate endeavor. Ahoitukam. Causeless, without any material, ulterior motive. People are looking to develop knowledge or the strength of renunciation for the wrong reasons. Knowledge is also a means of having power over other people. It can easily be abused. Even renunciation, tantric yogis, they refrain from sense gratification, engage in severe austerities, so they can in terrible ways gain control over other people. This is tamasic, in the mode of ignorance. So knowledge and renunciation can be bad, they can be misused, they can be tainted by the lower modes. But when one engages in devotional service to the Supreme Lord, he gets knowledge, he gets detachment from this material world without striving separately, without having to struggle very hard for them. And that knowledge and renunciation are pure, not materially motivated. So I'll go on with the purport. Yes. Okay. Prabhupada continues. Thus a devotee does not have to try separately for renunciation or knowledge. Devotional service itself is so powerful that by one's service attitude, everything is revealed. It is stated here, Shivakpantaha. This is the only auspicious path for self-realization. The path of devotional service is the most confidential means for attaining Brahman realization, or realization of the Brahmajyoti effulgence. Oh, I skipped something, I'm sorry. I skipped over half a sentence. That perfection in Brahman realization is attained through the auspicious path of devotional service. Okay, again. That perfection in Brahman realization is attained through the auspicious path of devotional service indicates that the so-called Brahman realization or realization of the Brahmajyoti effulgence is not Brahma Siddhi. Beyond that Brahmajyoti, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Upanishads, a devotee prays to the Lord to kindly put aside the effulgence, Brahmajyoti, so that the devotee may see within the Brahmajyoti the actual eternal form of the Lord. Unless one attains realization of the transcendental form of the Lord, there is no question of bhakti. Bhakti necessitates the existence of the recipient of devotional service. And the devotee who renders devotional service. Brahma Siddhi through devotional service is realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The understanding of the effulgent rays of the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not the perfect stage of Brahma Siddhi or Brahman realization. Nor is the realization of the Paramatma feature of the Supreme Person perfect. For Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Akhilatma. He is the Supersoul. One who realizes the Supreme Personality realizes the other features, namely the Paramatma feature and the Brahman feature. And that total realization is Brahma Siddhi. So, Hare Krishna. The Vedic worldview is different than the materialistic way of looking at the world that is prominent today. We, in the world we live in, and it's not just in the West, India has changed very much and adopted this materialistic worldview. It's giving up its own Vedic culture. Very, practically completely has done that already. The materialistic view is exploitative because there's no desire to have a serious connection with the Supreme Person. Therefore, we consider ourselves independent enjoyers and controllers. And the whole endeavor of human life is how to get more and more control over material nature, over each other, so that we can enjoy independently. This is the purpose of materialistic science, that we can conquer nature. It sounds very much like Ravana stealing Sita. But the Vedic point of view is just the opposite. The whole Vedic system is meant to teach us the attitude of service. It's a culture of respect. Anyone who is brought up in the Vedic culture learns respect. Even the karmis, even those who only perform some rituals and are full of material desires. You may be full of material desires, but if you perform sacrifice, yajna, even if you're not capable of doing it yourself, you hire some pundit to do your yajna for you, your samskaras, vivaha samskara and all the other samskaras, and you may perform some worship, puja. You have someone else, you have some Brahmin do it for you. But you're learning, you're following the Vedic system, and you are learning respect, first of all, for the Vedas, for the demigods and the sages, for the Brahmanas, So this is a good, this is a great accomplishment. Just by performing yajna, even if someone else does it for you, you're beginning to be trained up in the culture of respect. And the out of many such people who are performing yajna, who are purifying their work by offering it to the Supreme, out of thousands, one may become seriously interested in the real goal of life, liberation. Manashanam sahasreshu kastyad yatati siddhaye. So this verse talks about Brahma Siddhi. Same idea is expressed by, mentioned by Krishna in the Gita. Out of thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. It's recognized in the Vedic civilization that the goal of life is liberation. The goal of life is to get out of this material entanglement, not to become more and more entangled, not to remain here forever. This is understood even by the materialists in India. Any serious textbook on any topic will try to claim that by studying this topic you'll get liberation. So the Nyaya Shastra, which teaches epistemology and logic, claims nikshraya sodayaha, that liberation, the perfection of life, will come by studying the methods of logic. That's unlikely that just by becoming a good logician you will gain liberation. But the important idea, the point is that everyone's claiming, everyone's aiming at liberation. Even the Kama Sutra claims that it is helping you. By studying the Kama Sutra, it'll help you attain liberation. But how does one actually attain that perfection? What is that perfection? Lord Kapiladev is discussing that in this verse. What is the actual path, the actual means to attaining Brahma Siddhi? Prabhupada, in the purport, following the commentaries of our Vaishnavacharyas. I'm sorry, I haven't read these commentaries for this verse, but I presume that most of what Prabhupada is saying comes right from the commentaries. He explains what Brahma Siddhi is. Kapiladev, in this verse, does not, although in the next few verses, as we'll see in the following days this week, he clarifies what Brahma Siddhi is. He will do that, but he doesn't explain it in this verse. Prabhupada, to help us, identifies what that Brahma Siddhi is. He gives two definitions. Actually, three. Self-realization, Brahman realization, and then he says it's actually devotional service. Not just mixed devotional service, but giving everything to Krishna. That's his final definition of Brahma Siddhi. Brahma means the Supreme. Siddhi means achievement, perfection. It comes from the verb sad, to achieve. So you can have all sorts of siddhi. You can achieve all sorts of things. In Karnataka, one holy place, Kollur, Mukambaji, is there. And it is considered siddhisthana, where you can achieve the perfection of your desires or become perfect in whatever you're trying to become perfect in. So even for material perfections, you're supposed to go there. There's one mandapa there, perform, you know, for a stage for performing. So the musicians and dancers, they go there and perform in front of Mookambaji with the expectation that that will help them perfect their art. They'll become perfect in their art. That's their idea of city. But we're talking about Brahma City. The perfection of realizing one's unity with the Supreme. And now Prabhupada talks about it in three ways, from three different points of view. Of course, we would think that Brahma City means Brahman, the impersonal Supreme. And it must mean impersonal realization. But not necessarily. We do distinguish between Brahman and Bhagawan, that Bhagawan is the personality of Godhead, and Brahman is the impersonal feature. But actually, there is no difference. There's only one Supreme, Absolute Truth. And He is a person. The only difference between Brahman and Bhagawan is in the realization of the devotee. Srila Jiva Goswami explains in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, Brahman Paramatma and Bhagawan are all the same Supreme. But being realized with different levels of completeness. He gives the example of approaching a mountain. When you're coming toward the mountain from a long distance, you don't see anything clearly, just some vague shape. That is like Brahman realization. When you come closer, you may clearly see the shape of the mountain and even distinguish there's some trees on the mountains. A closer, clearer realization. That can be equated with Paramatma realization. And Bhagavan realization is when you get very close and you can even see people on the mountain. In Brahman realization, there is no perception of the qualities, the personal qualities of the Supreme. Because it's a vague, distant realization. Therefore, it's impersonal. In Paramatma realization, we see the Supreme as a person, four-handed Vishnu. We see Him in the heart. But He's not doing anything. He's just standing there, the witness. What He's doing is subtle. He's providing us knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. He's the supervisor of our intelligence. But we don't see His pastimes. Paramatma, that's the only pastime of the Paramatma, to be the witness. It's important. We can't live our life without the help of the Paramatma. You get up in the morning to remember who you are and where is your right and left foot. You need the help of the Paramatma.
Okay.
But His function is in the material world. There's no need for Paramatma in the spiritual world. And of course, Bhagavan is the full understanding of the Supreme with His personality and all His pastimes and His loving relationships with His devotees. It's all the same Supreme, just different levels of realization. So Brahma City, Brahman is Brahman. Brahman is the absolute truth. Although when we make the distinction of the three realizations of Brahman, we use the word Brahman to mean the impersonal Supreme. The Upanishads are using Brahman usually in a generic sense. The Upanishads are not impersonal. The Upanishads were not written by Mayavadis. They are the realizations. Actually, the Upanishads are eternal. Nobody wrote them. So the intelligence, the consciousness that is revealed, expressed in the Upanishads, is not an impersonal consciousness. But this is Gyanakanda. The Gyanis tend to be impersonal. The Gyanis are usually not ready to accept the personality of the Supreme. So that is de-emphasized in the Upanishads. And the term Brahman is used generically, the absolute, the supreme. It includes the personal feature, but that personality is not pushed, not emphasized, because those who are on the level of Jnana are tend to be not ready to accept that. Prabhupada's first definition of Brahma Siddhi is self-realization. He says this: the living entity is Brahman, and he can meditate on the Upanishadic mantra, "Aham Brahmasmi," I am Brahman. That's not wrong. Although the Mayavadis misuse that to think that I am God. But if your understanding is, I am also Satchidananda, I am pure spirit, then that's not a wrong meditation. So, Brahman realization is first of all self-realization, realization of your own self. You're also Brahman, you're also pure spirit. You can begin to understand the Supreme Spirit by understanding yourself. You are a small sample of the Supreme. So by studying, this is scientific methodology. You take a sample of a large thing and study it. Then you can understand the large thing. Oceanographers want to study the ocean, but they cannot bring the whole ocean into their laboratory. So they go out and collect a small, some reasonable sample, some bottles of water from the depths of the ocean, and bring that to the laboratory. They study a small sample, but they get a decent idea of what the ocean is like. Similarly, by knowing yourself as pure spirit, you get a good idea, you get a beginning in realizing the Supreme Spirit. That's the first meaning of Brahma Siddhi. Realize yourself. When we talk about self-realization, and that's also our process, we want to realize ourselves as Krishna's devotees. We have a specific kind of self-realization, but it is realizing yourself. Which means it's not our business to become something other than what we are. We're just trying to become our own selves. We're not being forced, we're not being twisted into some other shape. Self-realization means to realize who you are as an individual. You don't have to change into something else. Then the second definition, Brahma Siddhi, is realizing the Supreme Brahman. That's not an easy thing to do. Shankaracharya, in his method, prescribes very strict sadhana. Very strict renunciation and practice of austerities, study of Vedanta, strict following of all regulative principles. And he expects that one must take sannyas. There's no serious study or no serious approach to Brahman realization unless one takes sannyas. It's a very strict path. We see in practice, at least in our times, most of the Advaitavadi sannyasis are not following much of a sadhana. Very few of them have any real sadhana. All these sadhus, Ekadantis, not many of them are following much of a sadhana. But Shankaracharya's original method is very strict, very rigorous. Very rigorous, difficult sadhana for achieving Brahman realization. Klesho dikataras tesham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta higatir dukkam dehavadbira vapyate. There's a lot of trouble involved in trying to realize the Supreme impersonally, because it's not natural for a living soul, a living conscious being, who has a personality, to try to match himself up with some formless, nameless, impersonal supreme. Dehavadbir, those who have bodies, not only material bodies, even in our spiritual condition we have spiritual bodies. That's our inseparable nature. That we're dehavan. We have senses, we have a mind, we have feelings. And in the impersonal path, we're supposed to try to obliterate all of that. Obliterate our mind. Obliterate our feelings, our personality. So that we can link up with the Supreme who has no personality, no feelings, and no mind. It's an unnatural thing to do. And therefore, it's very difficult. Painful. That's the Brahma city of the impersonalists. But Prabhupada clarifies, that's not what Kapila Dev is aiming at. He's not recommending that at all to his mother. He will clarify it. Kapila Dev will clarify this in the next verses. Prabhupada, to avoid any confusion on our part, he explains it right now in this purport. Maybe I'll read the few sentences again.
What one verse?
Success, siddhi, karma siddhi, jnana siddhi, yoga siddhi, without adding at least some devotional service. If you want to perform sacrifice, that sacrifice ultimately has to be offered to the Supreme. Yajyo vai Vishnuhu. This is stated in the Shatapatha Brahmana. The sacrifice is Vishnu. You may be offering to various devatas, but those demigods are only representatives of the Supreme Person. It is explained elsewhere that Lord Govinda loans his own powers, his own forms, and his own names to living entities who take the position of demigods. Indra is the king of heaven. The name Indra means king. But who is the original Indra? That is Krishna. When Indra was defeated by Krishna in the Govardhan Leela, and he came with great remorse to surrender to Krishna's lotus feet. He was ashamed. He was ashamed to even approach him. He came with Mother Surabhi because he was ashamed to approach alone. And then he wanted to perform Abhishek of Krishna. This was done at Govindakunda, at Govardhan. Why? Because he wanted to acknowledge and make it known to everyone that Krishna is the real king of heaven. So the royal Abhishek, installing Krishna as the real Indra. The ceremony was performed. All the demigods, Brahma and everyone else, participated in the Abhishek. And Mother Surabhi prayed, Sapatu no Indra Govam. May he protect us. The Indra of the cows, she qualified it. You're especially the Indra of the cows. Indra Govam. Or if you turn it around, Govinda. Krishna is the original Indra. Original. He's the original. And all the demigods are simply manifesting his partial powers and borrowing his forms and his names. So, you may be worshipping different devatas by performing puja and yajna. But if you don't offer it ultimately to Vishnu, the fruit of your sacrifice, you will not get perfection in as a karmi. No karma siddhi without some devotional service. No jnana siddhi without some devotional service. At least a small amount. No yoga siddhi without a little devotional service. So when, suppose a karmi starts to feel devotion, starts to actually make some offering to Krishna, or to some form of Narayan. Then he's no longer just a karmi. He's practicing karma yoga. We can say that he's a he's practicing bhakti mishra karma, because there's a little bhakti there. And his bhakti may increase more and more if he's fortunate and sincere. Eventually, it will come to the point that it's more than 50% bhakti and less karma. Then the bhakti mishra karma has become karma mishra bhakti. Then he's performing mixed devotional service when it becomes more than 50% bhakti. Similarly with the Gyani, go through that process also. So mixed devotional service is there. There are many Vaishnavas who are performing such mixed devotional service. They're not serious about leaving this world, so they're performing karma mishra bhakti. They're satisfied to stay here, but they want to worship God. And there are others who are practicing devotional service, but they have a strong desire to gain liberation for themselves. So they are karma, jnana mishra bhaktas. Kapiladeva is recommending something better than that, pure devotional service, without either motive. Similarly, Srila Rupa Goswami, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, begins his treatise with pure devotional service. He doesn't even pay attention to mixed devotional service. He doesn't consider it worth talking about, not for the purpose of that book. In the very beginning, he defines what is pure devotional service. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma adhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Uttama bhakti, the best form of devotional service. Devotional service, pure. And he defines it. Anyabhilashita shunyam. Devoid of desires for anything else. Ulterior motives. Jnana karma adi anavritam. Uncovered by the endeavors for material success and for liberation. He doesn't say jnana karma shunyam, devoid of the cultivation of knowledge and performance of work. We can do work, we can pursue knowledge, but they should not predominate. Our main business is to become attracted to Krishna and learn to love Him. So our pursuits of knowledge and our working should be subordinated completely to devotional service. They shouldn't be allowed to predominate for them on their own. When we study Srimad Bhagavatam, we're not going to take an exam at the end of the year, you know, and then, you know, get a degree, pass or fail, and then we can forget everything after taking the test. The purpose of studying Srimad Bhagavatam is not to cram your head with facts. The whole purpose of our study of the Bhagavatam is to become attracted to Krishna. That's what we're supposed to learn. That's what Vyasadeva and Shukadeva are aiming at. That's why they've designed this course, to teach us how to become uninterested in material things and interested in Krishna. That's all we need to learn. Everything else is detail. So Lord Kapiladev, in the next few verses, is going to describe the process of pure devotional service, how it satisfies all the desires and needs of the spirit soul, and how the devotees are the real sadhus, the real saintly persons. And although we want to get free from material association, we can do that most effectively by becoming attached to the devotees of the Supreme Lord.
Okay, so I'll stop there. Do we have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. No? I don't see. Who else has? Oh, Mike. Yes.
So you were talking about the first, we try to understand who are we, and then we understand God.
Yes.
So far, we have the example of that when the sun rises, then we can see ourselves also. That when there is Paramatma realization or God realization,
yes.
Self-realization also takes place.
Yes. Okay, so I was described, I'll just repeat. I'll summarize. I said that first comes realizing yourself and then you realize Brahman. But you referred to a statement of Prabhupada's that when the sun rises, then you can, in the light of the sun, you can see yourself. So that you realize Brahman and then you realize yourself. It seems to be backwards. No, first you should understand that you are spirit soul. Or anyway, this is a normal process. We can't jump over it. We can go directly to Krishna consciousness. But the gradual process, the normal process is realize yourself as spirit first. Understand what is the nature of spirit. Then we can understand the identity of the Supreme Spirit. So that requires accepting his personality to actually understand him. When you understand that the Supreme is the person, Vishnu, Krishna, then what you realize about yourself is your relationship with him. Before, in the first stage, you only realize that I'm pure spirit. I'm not of this world. I'm not matter, I'm spirit. That's just a preliminary realization. When you realize that Krishna is the Supreme Person, the reservoir of all pleasure, and I'm meant to share that pleasure with him, then you get the higher realization of your relationship with Krishna. So both are there. First you realize yourself, then you can realize Krishna, and then you can realize yourself in relationship with Krishna. Okay? Yes? Anyway, that's what it looks like to me. Maybe I'm not right.
Is not that the same thing we are calling out? Exactly the same standard which other Mahaprabhu has told us. Some according to time, place and circumstance, many things are there. So they can criticize us from that angle. So in what way we are like special, like even after out of the preaching mission and everything, but many times it happens that on the name of preaching they have to compromise on certain things. So like in what way we are special than them?
What kind of compromise?
Compromise in the sense like certain things
Okay. Okay, so you're giving the example of not chanting 64 rounds. Okay. No, you don't mean breaking the principles. Thing is, we have been authorized to chant only 16 rounds. Prabhupada said our standard for ISKCON is minimum 16 rounds. If you want to chant 64, if you can fit it in the day, okay. But we shouldn't be idle. You know, refuse to do service because we have to chant our 64 rounds. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, although he wanted all his disciples to chant 64 rounds, he made an exception for the active preachers that they can chant 16. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not eat in the home of someone who's not a lakpati. Because lakpati is nothing nowadays. You have to be a kurapati. But back then, to have 100,000 rupees was a lot of money. Now even beggars have that much. Yeah. That meant he would not eat in the house of someone who didn't chant one lakh of names, 64 rounds. That is the standard. but our acharyas have made the adjustment for preaching. It's not a compromise. It's authorized by the sampradaya. That is adjustment according to time and place. It is perfectly appropriate. If we're following the path of the bona fide acharyas, we're going to attain Krishna's satisfaction. We shouldn't be pedantic or rigid because the rule was such and such. But if the acharyas make an adjustment, then it's authorized. Does that answer the question? Or? Well, let's look at it from one point of view. Traditionally, the Gaudiya Sampradaya following the example of Rupa Sanatana and Raghunath Das, if you were serious about practicing devotional service, you would take Babaji initiation and try to practice Raghunuga Bhakti. According to the teachings of Rupa Goswami, this is a bona fide process, and most of the serious Gaudiya Vaishnavas up until recently, there were Grihasthas also, there were the Goswamis and so on, but strong emphasis on renunciation, and not practically no one took sannyas in our sampradaya. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur reintroduced that. His father, it was his idea, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that we have to reinstitute the Daivi Varnashrama, even though the Babajis ignore the Varnashram system. They consider themselves Paramahamsas. And if you're properly practicing, if you're actually fit to practice Raghunuga Bhakti, then you are transcendental to the Varnashram system. You can ignore even taking sannyas. The thing is that the age has become so corrupt already that hardly anybody is fit anymore to immediately engage in Raghunuga Bhakti. So we find most of the Babajis today, I'm living in a place where there are many Babajis. Some of them are very sincere. They're not all hypocrites. But the process is not so effective nowadays because the persons who want to enter it are not so qualified to actually sit down and just meditate on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Who is ready to do that nowadays? 500 years ago, many more people were, but nowadays, less and less. Very few. So the Babajis are following the original process according to the letter. We're following the adjusted process. Emphasis on Vaidhi Bhakti, on rules and regulations of devotional service and practice. Division according to the Varnashram system. Some of us are wearing saffron, some of us are grihasthas, some of us are sannyasis. This is a practical adjustment so that all of us who are not qualified to immediately begin Raghunuga Bhakti, we can practice Vaidhi Bhakti in order to become fit for Raghunuga Bhakti. Ata chittam samadhatum na shaknosi mayi stiram abhyasa yogena tato mami chaptum dananjaya. So it's not a new idea. Krishna himself described it. If you can't simply think of me 24 hours a day, then practice devotional service. And it will gradually awaken the desire in your heart to practice. You'll become gradually fit for Raghunuga Bhakti. So we're better to follow our own acharyas. It's something that will be much more effective than to try to imitate Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Okay? Anything else? Do you want me to put my...
You mentioned that we're not studying Srimad Bhagavatam in order to take a test at the end of the year.
Yes.
But we know that the devotees take courses of Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vibhava, and they do take tests. So how to...
Well, that's a special program that Prabhupada did institute, the system of systematic study. And the Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, course is Prabhupada's idea. So that's good. But ultimately, we're going to be tested on how we've become attracted to Krishna. We should become expert in Prabhupada's books. And anyway, the Bhakti Shastri course is not that difficult. The test is not that hard. Yeah. I don't think have they already given tests for Bhakti Vaibhava? They haven't finished the course.
Well, they finished half of the course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, systematic study is good. But again, it's not just memorizing all the facts. It's understanding Krishna, our relationship with Krishna, and that's basically what we have to understand. Okay. Yes, Prabhu. Are we running too late? Okay. Okay. Yes. Why not? We're covered over by Maya. Because we're criminals. We committed the crime of rejecting Krishna. That's why we're in the material world. And the criminals are put into prison. Our prison consists of the three modes of nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance cover our intelligence, so that we can't remember that we're Krishna's devotees. We can't even remember that we're spirit soul. Yasa mohito jivo atmanam trigunatmakam padopi manute nartam tatkritam chabi padyate. That the material nature, Krishna's maidservant, bewilders the living entity. Atmanam, even though he actually is transcendental, he is pure spirit, and he's actually Krishna's loving devotee, by the influence of Maya, he falsely thinks that he's a product of the material modes. I'm this body, my relationship is with my family, my country, my circle of friends, my money, all material identities. Because of that, he forgets his real identity. That's the power of Maya. We have to become free from that Maya. That's the beginning. When I realize I'm pure spirit, I can get free from matter. I can get free from material attachment, knowing that I'm spirit. Brahma Bhutat Prasanatma. One who rises to the platform of Brahman realization. I am pure spirit. I'm not a product of the three modes. Prasanatma, he becomes satisfied. Nashochati Nakanchati, he doesn't lament, he doesn't hanker for acquiring so many material things. Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu, he can be equally disposed to everyone, he doesn't have any enemies. Or he doesn't have people, friends and lovers who actually he's just taking for his own exploitation. Mad bhaktim labhate param. Having reached that Brahman Bhuta platform, then he can progress further to pure devotional service. It's only the beginning of self-realization to understand your pure spirit. Then you have to understand Krishna and understand what it means to be Krishna's servant. That is the educational process of devotional service. Okay. Yes. Yes, Prabhu. That's it.
We discuss about Brahma. When person is there, they emerge into Brahman and they are interested in Brahman. But what is the case of devotees? Like how they approach and how they pass this stage of Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan? Do they directly go or in this very life they can realize these things or how? What is the process of realizing all these things? Directly Brahman they realize or do they go through this process? Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan.
Well, devotees are not much interested in the impersonal feature of Krishna. When you can have Krishna, when you can stand in front of his deity, why do you want to stand in front of just Om or some light? So the devotees therefore have already graduated beyond that kind of Brahman impersonal realization. But we can say that devotees go through the stage of Brahman realization because they realize you got to learn that you're not this body. We haven't completely learned that yet. We still have our bodily identifications, attachments. So Brahman realization means simply understanding you're not this body, really fully realizing it. That we're still working on. So in that sense, we still have to achieve Brahman realization. I am Baham Brahmasmi. You know, I'm not this body. Yes?
Does it happen in this very life or where to leave the body and then see Brahman realization and Brahman realization?
No.
In the body or in this very life?
No, we can become fully Krishna conscious in this life. Although normally the process takes many lifetimes, we have special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and special mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada has said, if you just practice this process for your whole lifetime without stopping, you will go back to Godhead after this life. It's a special offer. Just like someone is selling cars, can, you know, say, okay, 50% off all the cars for the next week. He can do that. So Prabhupada has made a special offer. You can have Krishna's lotus feet in one lifetime. Krishna is obliged to fulfill. His pure devotee is making the offer. Krishna has to fulfill the order. So it's guaranteed. That's not normal, but we're getting special mercy. So if you can become fully Krishna conscious in one lifetime, Brahman realization, Paramatma realization is automatically included. Realize Krishna, everything else is already realized. Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
Recently, we were discussing from Madhurya Kalandari, the different stages, Madhurya Kalandari.
Yes?
Madhurya Kalandari.
Oh, Madhurya Kalandari, yes.
Yeah, recently we were discussing from that. So we were discussing the different stages of
normally, to enter the spiritual world, you have to have love of God. Which means you have to get that, to get prema, you have to give up all contamination. You have to become purified completely. You can rise up to the higher levels and still maintain some subtle traces of material attachment. Up to bhava. At least up to rati. But to enter prema, you must be 100% pure. And to enter the spiritual world, you're supposed to have prema. But Krishna can show his special mercy. He can, at the time of death, cleanse you of all your contamination. Even though you didn't do that much. You didn't do enough to completely cleanse yourself in this lifetime. There are cases of disciples of Prabhupada who even left ISKCON and stopped following the regulative principles. But Prabhupada showed them very, you know, and then they left their bodies. And we see that they got very special mercy from Prabhupada. They became, again, very Krishna conscious just before they're leaving their body. I can't say for sure that they went back to Godhead. But Krishna came, Prabhupada came, and even though they didn't do so much, you know, after they left, you know, they had been practicing for years and then they left, and then it was, they were dying, and all of a sudden, Prabhupada just came and showered his mercy on them, and their consciousness became purified, extremely. So Krishna can come and grab us at the time of death, even if we're not completely fit. That's his choice. But normally, you're supposed to have prema. And to have prema, you have to be 100% pure. Okay? So we can stop here? Thank you. All glory Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.